Good evening, everyone.
25 years went by fast.
Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Thanks, everyone, for being here and finding this new room, which I'm told is or was called the Ways and Means Room. I don't know why. We'll have to figure that out. But we have quite an agenda tonight. I do want to recognize former Representative Kahn, who just had a nice party and was a member of this committee for many, many years. And I know that Representative...
Sorry, I did not see that point. What did it say?
I love old Jewish ladies. Okay. All right.
Representative Carlson isn't here yet. Normally I would want to wait for him as the lead, but I also know that other people have got committees tonight, and I think we've got a few bills up that I don't think have a great deal of controversy. So maybe I can start with Representative Tice, but I do have the minutes here. Would someone move approval of the minutes of March 6th? Representative Davids moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, changes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Tice, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the members. Chair will be proud to move that House File 369 be referred to the General Register. Representative Tice.
I don't want to take a lot of time, Mr. Chairman, talking about this because I think this is one of the coolest things that we can do for the state of Minnesota, and that's to increase your mic is on.
I can barely hear you.
I know.
There you go.
Okay, better? I think what we can do is increase our return on investment and our money, and I think we do that with the independent centers and also with Resource Inc. And with that, I'm going to be considerate of your time and introduce and have Ms. Kara Ruff tell you a little bit more about the programs that we're looking at.
Ms. Ruff, please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kara Ruff. I'm the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles, the Center for Independent Living in Sauk Rapids, and I'm also the Legislative Liaison for the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Centers for Independent Living are statewide. There are 8 centers in Minnesota, which this bill covers. And we serve people of all disabilities. So anyone with a cognitive, physical, mental, emotional, chemical, sensory, any type of disability, and from birth to death, we provide a wide variety of services to, ranging from independent living skills, accessibility, transportation, employment skills, representative payee services, peer mentoring, advocacy, information and referral, and a whole lot more. I know you do have our handouts in front of you. I think one of the things that I hope stands out for you is that we are organization governed by consumer control. So 51% of our staff and our board of directors all must be people with disabilities themselves so that we're governed by those that we serve. When someone comes to us for services, we don't say, well, you need to do A, B, C, and D as in a traditional model. We say, what does independent living mean to you, and how can we best assist you in creating a plan that will meet your goals? One of the things that we're most proud about is our return on investment. In the past year, we assisted 61 individuals in relocating out of nursing homes, and we prevented thousands from having to be moved into nursing homes or higher cost institutions. If we were to take just 25% of that cost savings, it would amount to over $25 million in savings for the state of Minnesota. So we're really proud about that. This money would go to serve all the 8 centers and help us better serve the constituents throughout Minnesota with disabilities. We have very large service areas to serve between 9 and 11 counties per center, and we simply just need more funding to be able to adequately serve all of our areas.
Any questions for Representative Tice or Ms. Ruff? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I don't want to love the bill to death, but just let everyone know this has strong bipartisan support. Passed out of the Jobs Committee with, I believe, unanimous support. There was no dissent. Contains geographic balance, and it's something that I think is has broad consensus in the body. I'm asked for members to support.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of House File 360. I'm sorry. Representative Hausman, did you have a question?
I just wondered what X1 meant on the little graph.
Oh, that was one-time money. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? See no other questions. I'll renew my motion that House File 369 be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 369 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tyson. Ms. Ruff. Let's take Representative Albright's bill next, House File 474. Chair will move that House File 474 be referred to the General Register. Representative Albright, welcome back to the Committee on Ways and Means.
My heart has never left you, Mr. Chair, so. Mr. Chair and members, thank you. House File 474 is here for the purposes of a small fiscal note, but before I explain that, the bill itself is a technical fix that was required to permit the Comac to function as it was intended. Minnesota statute authorizes criminal background checks that we need to recognize payment for. This facilitates that. The BCA does the criminal background check, and then correspondingly the medical practice board pays for the invoice. So that is the purpose of the fiscal note on the bill.
Questions for Representative Albright. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was sort of hoping this was going to be a fix to something else, and I wondered if that you've been part of that conversation at all. Apparently, whether it's a coming together of two state requirements or state and federal, but when physicians, I understand this from a health partners person who's in human resources and deals with all the physicians, they have to get a background check at every facility they practice. So because they practice in multiple hospitals and long-term care facilities, This is a massive management piece of rather than just once as they come into the state that they have to do it multiple times. I didn't know if that's any part of this discussion at all or whether anyone else recognizes that that's a.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I'm not familiar with the detailing of what you described, but I'm happy to work offline to get a follow-up answer for you.
Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 474 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 474 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, members, I know that there are a number of staff people here for House File 5. In the interest of that, let's take House File 5 next. Representative Davids moves that House File 5 be referred to the General Register. Representative Davids, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman members. If I could move the H00058-17 amendment. And members, what that does is that gets rid of the possibility of an MSHA assessment. And then we'll go through the funding.
Okay. And members, this is the A17 amendment. It's being passed out. Members, we don't have a 24-hour rule on this bill because we just got the bill when it was referred to us at the House session at 12:15 today. Members, I'll wait for just a little bit for the amendment to be passed out. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. House File 5 is known as the reinsurance bill. And just to briefly explain what it does, and then this is a money committee, so we can talk about money. What it does is it sets up a reinsurance pool for the individual market with several flexible attachment points. And the bill says cannot be less than $50,000 to start the reinsurance, cannot be more than $250,000. And the reason I allow some flexibility in there is because We are working on this, not knowing what's coming from the feds, and so it sets up the MSHA board to administer the program, and then once you hit $50,000 or whatever that number's set at, then the MSHA board could pick between 50 and 70% coinsurance from possibly $50,000 to $250,000. And so that's what the bill does. Senate File 1 was passed very quickly in January. That bought down the premiums of the individual market about 25%. There were three or four other reforms, such as continuity of care and some other things that were put in Senate File 1. We had talked about putting this bill in with Senate File 1 originally, but this was a little bit more complicated than the other reforms, so we wanted some time to work on this. If you heard Commissioner Rothman in the Commerce Committee today, you will know that a bill needs to move very, very quickly, and there's several different ideas out there. And so he said that he needs, or that we need a bill by April 1st so that the plans can start working on setting their rates and they will know what they have for a reinsurance plan that will really take pressure off the carriers. And the goal with this bill, this is not the be-all, end-all by any means. There's other reforms that will probably come forward that need to be done. But this is a very important cog, if you will, to get a market for 2018. I personally agree with Commissioner Rothman that something has to be done quickly. I also do not want to put Commissioner Rothman and the department through what they went through last year, where they tried to cobble together some programs, and as you know, there's very limited access in most Minnesota counties. So with that, if we look at the funding, Mr. Chairman and members, you should actually have that from the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We take HMO premium tax in 18. Well, I'm not going to read through the whole thing. You can see what we're doing there. And then what my amendment would do is it just removes the MSHA backstop, which you don't, I don't think you even see it here. So, Mr. Chairman, members, we take 1% of the tax on the HMO gross premiums, and then you can just read through the revenue note to see where the rest of the funding comes from. So those are the money parts of my bill, and I really appreciate your support, Mr. Chairman and members.
Okay, members, we have that A-17 amendment that has been passed out. Representative Davids moves the A-17 amendment. Members, is there discussion to that A-17 amendment? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I heard this bill in the HHS Finance Committee, but I have to say, I haven't seen the amendment, and I'm really not clear about what the amendment is doing and how it's changing it. So I wonder if maybe fiscal staff could talk about that.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm trying to do this quickly, match it up with the bill, but it's just too fast.
No, that's fine. No, this is an important bill. All bills are important, but this is an important bill that spends a lot of money, so we want to make sure that everyone's fully informed. Representative Davids, why don't you briefly again tell us what the amendment does, and then if we have fiscal staff can walk us through a little bit more closely.
Certainly, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Liebling, for that question. What we're doing with this amendment is we're removing the backstop for MSHA as a funding source that would kick in if we went through all the other funds. Now, realistically, I happen to believe that the feds will come through with something, and so there should be actually more money put in here, and that we really shouldn't need that backstop for MSHA. And so we're still funding it as we were, it's just that the MSHA backstop is removed. When I say the MSHA backstop, I mean turning on the MSHA assessment, or the MSHA tax, if you will, as a last resort.
Okay, and members, I'd like to recognize Lori Pampush from House Research to further answer Representative Liebling's question.
Chair and members, the MCHA assessment was added for fiscal years 2019 and thereafter as the last tier of funding, and this amendment removes language from Section 1 and 2 that allow for that assessment, as well as the last tier of funding for fiscal year 2019 and afterwards from the end of the bill.
Are there questions on the A-17 amendment? Representative Lively.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm understanding this right, that money was there as what Representative Davis is calling a backstop in case the costs of, let me just back up. So what this bill is doing, members, it's insuring the insurance companies against excessive costs. And as in when insurance companies take risk, they are taking the risk that the people they are covering are going to incur very expensive costs. And so as I'm understanding the explanation here, this is saying that in the bill as it was, without the amendment, there's an additional funding stream in case the cost should rise above a certain point. And now that's being removed. So I guess my question is, what happens then if we were to enact this and there's some, I don't know, just say there's some kind of epidemic and people are really sick and there's a lot of really expensive care that's needed and the costs are much higher than expected. How are those costs covered under the bill?
Ms. Pender.
Chair and members, if you look at line 6.15 of the bill, if the amount in the premium security plan is not anticipated to be enough to adequately fund the program, the Commissioner of Commerce, along with the Commissioner of Management and Budget, have to work with the board to propose payment parameters that will fit inside of the amount of money available.
Representative Lee.
So, Mr. Chair, and thank you. So what I understand that to mean is that we would stop paying providers, or that we would somehow ration the payments to providers to fit within the money available in the bill. Is that what that means?
Ms. Pampush.
Chair and members, so the board sets the attachment point, which right now says $50,000 or more per person. The coinsurance cap, which is $250,000 or less, and the coinsurance rate, and that's what is considered the payment parameters. So if the program is not funded appropriately, it will change those parameters to work within existing funding.
So,
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, okay, so those would be adjusted, which means I don't know how quickly those can be adjusted. I assume you can only adjust them for some point in the future. So there could be losses that would be then, you'd be adjusting them, I suppose, so that the insurance companies would carry more of the cost and the public portion would be less in that case. Is that how it works? And I guess there's no predicting how much would be carried by whom, if that would happen. Am I right?
Representative Davids or Ms. Pampush?
Well, yes, I would simply say that if we got a situation where claims were much, much more than expected, we built in many protections here, but if they're much, much more than expected, the Commerce Commissioner, and the way it's set up in the bill, is you go probably from 50,000, if it actually made sense, you might go to 70,000, you might go from 250 to 230. So the client's not going to see any difference, but the insurance company would have to go into reserves and pay those claims.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davis, what if it's the other way? What if the pool is expecting to pay more? We set aside more money, and, in fact, those claims don't come to fruition. What happens to the pot of money? Does it come back to the general fund? Does it go to the insurance companies? Where does the money go?
I think it comes to the insurance agents at that point. But
any
maybe Ms. Pompo has an idea here.
Ms. Pampush.
Chair and members, when the board sets the payment parameters, they have to take into consideration how much the program is going to cost in the upcoming year. And one of their first considerations is how much federal funding is available. So it's the intent of the different items that the board has to take into consideration when determining the payment parameters that they not overfund the program for the year. So they would, again, adjust the payment parameters on July 1st for the next year's anticipated claims to not overfund the program?
Representative Davids.
Well, I think Representative Hellstrom asked a very good question. I'd want to clarify that myself, because let's say nobody's sick, everybody's happy and doing well, and there's a whole bunch of money left over. It was my understanding that that would then go to the general fund. Is that correct? Or does it stay in the plan for future use? So there's $50 million left on the bottom line. What happens to that?
Ms. Pampush.
There isn't a mechanism right now to move money from the premium security plan account into the general fund. The idea is set up for the board to readjust the payment parameters for the future so that they pay out less money for the next year.
Representative Hillstrom, I should tell you, I toyed with coming up with an amendment on that too, but one of the things is with what's going on in Washington, D.C., I think at least the preliminary bill that's been out there under discussion seems to have potentially quite a bit of money for plans like this that would be available from the federal government. And if that, in fact, materializes, I think we're going to want to have some sort of mechanism that automatically brings it back to the general fund. But, of course, we don't know what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. yet.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe that needs to be the potential amendment that comes. I want to make sure that this doesn't end up being a windfall for insurance companies that think the state's going to be paying more, so then our parameters get much broader even than they anticipate, and then they end up getting the benefit when we took all the risk.
Well, Mr. Representative Davids. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the bill, if there's money on the bottom line, then they can just, let's say they're at 70 and 230, they could go to 50 and 250. So there's nowhere in the bill that says this money goes to insurance companies.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Representative Davids, if they're anticipating that they're going to pay claims up to 75 and then we take it down to 50, that just was a $25,000 windfall of claims they don't have to pay. So we here at the state should not subsidize more than what it is that we're anticipating subsidizing. They shouldn't get a windfall.
Right.
Representative Davids.
And saying, Mr. Chairman, I would say they don't get a windfall. The parameters go down. We're setting the parameters at minimum 50, maximum 250. So the advantage of the way this is designed, if there would be more in the bottom line, then they would be able to pass savings on to their policyholders because they'd have fewer costs.
Okay, members, actually, we are still on the A-17 amendment. Are there other questions to the A-17 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the A-17 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A-17 amendment is adopted. Okay, other questions to the bill as amended? Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, and kind of to Representative Hillstrom's question, you know, the problem, or one of the problems with this bill is that there's no guarantee at all that there's not a windfall for insurance companies. And that's because there's nothing in the bill that tells us that the insurance companies are going to reduce the rates. Unless Representative Davids has come up with something different since this was in HHS Finance Committee, I mean, there's absolutely nothing here that requires the rates to be reduced. So, I mean, I think that we have several goals for a plan, anything we put in place to deal with what's going on in the individual market. I mean, one issue is that it has to stabilize the market going forward. And since this bill is supported by the insurance companies, I suppose that that's the one thing it may do is encourage insurance companies to actually sell insurance, because they will be kind of guaranteed that they'll make money, at least better money than they are guaranteed now. So we've got that. But in terms of affordability of premiums for Minnesotans who are buying this insurance, there's absolutely nothing here that guarantees that. And if I'm wrong about that and something's changed, I hope Representative Davids will correct me. And the other thing that it doesn't do that is very important that we really have to grapple with is the issue about access. and access, you know, that it may be that that needs to be dealt with in another bill, but I think access is kind of a twofold thing. One is that it must mean that it has something to do with networks, that you can actually find a treatment, a provider in, you know, that you are allowed to access. But I think there's also an affordability component to access. So it'd be great to have lots of plans sold on the market, but if you can't afford them, that's not access. So I think that this is to me, a very troubling plan that's being put forward here. I don't think it meets the goals of what we all want to do, which is make sure that people have quality health care at a price they can afford. And I'm just not seeing that in this bill. I think that this bill is great for insurance companies. If I was an insurance company, I'm sure I'd love this bill. But as somebody who's trying to make sure that people get access to health care and make sure that the public dollar is guarded as much as possible, especially at a time when we don't know what D.C. is going to do to us. And, in fact, well, I think the one thing we do know is that we're going to have less money coming into the state for health care, whether that's cuts to Medicaid or whether it's cuts to the Affordable Care Act or both. It's probably going to be both. So given that, I have a lot of concern about this bill. And I do agree. I commend Representative Davids for working on this. This is not easy stuff. And we do have a deadline. But I'm not seeing that this bill is ready for prime time. I just think there's, well, certainly I feel like I don't have a really good enough grasp of what it's doing, but I haven't heard that it's going to help with affordability of premiums. That's for sure. Maybe Representative Davids has more information on that piece.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Let me put it this way. If we don't pass this bill, there will be no access. There's a very real possibility in 2018 there will be no access. The system that Commissioner Rothman had to cobble together for 2017 is shameful. Talk about not having access. A lot of people don't have access. There is no affordability. Now, I have been holding back on promising great rate decreases. I personally believe that you will see some pretty substantial rate decreases. Now, when you look at the department's plan, they're projecting 17 to 23% rate decreases. Their plan's a bit different. I've seen studies on some projections here, but I'm not going to publicly state those, because as soon as you give a number, you're going to be held to that number, and I'm not willing to do that. But what I do know is that if we don't pass this bill, there's a very high likelihood that there won't be a market in 2018, period, end of story. So this baby's ready for prime time. This one's ready to rock and roll. We're ready to go. Because as Commissioner Rothman was saying in committee today, in Commerce Committee today, we have to get a bill passed by April 1st. Cut and dry, very simple. And I agree with Commissioner Rothman. He's right. Now, is this the way the bill's going to look at the end of the day? I don't know. We heard a Halverson bill today where there's some ideas there. We've had other ideas. We've looked at the Alaska model. We've looked at different things. But where we stand now, I think this is probably the most feasible bill to go forward with. And you'll notice that the funding mechanisms are short-term, because we have to limp along to get through 2018. And if this bill doesn't, this is ready for prime time. If we don't do this, all the things Representative Liebling says she wants aren't going to be there. So my goal is to get a market where we have some carriers. Where I live in Fillmore County, there's not an all-access carrier there, period. Nothing. Our biggest provider is down where I live in Preston is Olmsted Medical Center. Chatfield, Spring Valley, Olmsted Medical Center. Well, because of what's happening, because of the ACA, they're not covered under Blue Plus. And that's no fault of the Blues. They lost $500 million. They had to make some decisions, too. And so, vote as you will. I'm voting yes. She's ready.
Other discussion? Representative Hulsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't serve on that committee, and I'm seeing this for the first time. I was under the assumption that everyone was in agreement that we needed two fixes. We needed the short-term fix and the long-term fix, and that short-term fix was that earlier bill that we passed relative to insurance premiums. And then I was under the impression, now we all agreed that we still needed a long term. What I'm not certain about is, does this just stand alone? I assumed that was going to be a fairly complicated set of changes for that long-term fix, and I don't know how this fits with that challenge.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman. In the health industry, this is about a 1 or 2 year fix, and in the health industry, that's a long-term fix. We have to get through 18 to get to 19. And we don't get to 18 if we don't pass a bill, this bill or a bill like this. I'm not saying this has all the answers. I think this is the way to go. I think the reinsurance pool is definitely the way to go. There's some other ideas out there for presumptive conditions. That's what we heard in Commerce today. There's some issues with that. But we need to get this, as Commissioner Rothman said, done quickly. We need to get it out here today, rules tomorrow. Out sometime next week, go to conference committee, work with the governor's office, and get this done. So long-term fix is 1 or 2 years, and that's what this is. This is not the fix for the next 4 years. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, let alone 2-3 years from now. So this is not the panacea that this fixes it forever. This is going to be worked on for a long, long time. Hopefully this gets us to 18 words of the market.
Representative Hausman. Did you have another question?
Well,
we're going to come back to you.
So there is, just to clarify then, so there is still a, this travels alone now, but fixes one thing. But might we even yet this year see another package that approaches it from a different perspective?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hausman, not that I'll be carrying.
I was looking around the table, see.
Well, Representative Hausman, obviously there will be an omnibus health and human service finance bill. I guess I can't speak to what's going to be in it, but there's certainly the opportunity for additional things in there. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Davids. Based on the amendment that we adopted, does that change the fiscal note, or does this bill still cost approximately $315 million in the biennium?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom, for the question. It shouldn't change the numbers because that was a blink on, and so we can't account for what would blink on. And maybe fiscal staff can help out with that, but I believe that's stated correctly.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, the amendment did not change the fiscal impact. As far as the cost, perhaps the revenue estimate that has the Department of Revenue on the top corner was probably the best indicator of the money involved here. And if you look at that first grouping where it starts out HMO premiums tax, it's showing what Representative Davids reviewed earlier, the HMO premiums tax that currently goes to the Health Care Access Fund would be diverted to this account. There's a transfer from the Health Care Access Fund totaling $80 million in the biennium that to this account. And then the other insurance taxes is diverting $70 million a year of taxes currently going to the general fund to this account. So it's actually about $384 million in the biennium from two different, from Healthcare Access Fund and from General Fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's about $384 million in the first biennium and then about $315 million or so in the second biennium. And then is that ongoing based on the language in the bill now?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it would be ongoing. The numbers, the premium tax will fluctuate slightly, but it would be ongoing at that fiscal 21 level into the future, or approximately the fiscal 21 level into the future.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in taxes, I asked a question about the waiver. And after the meeting, I did talk to the our representative from the department, and he testified briefly, and he said that they felt that they could meet that timeline. But they also said that it was pretty ambitious. They have to submit a plan by July 5th, if I recall, and then this has to be up and running by July 1st, 2018, or January 1st, 2018. And the question I have, now they felt they could make it, but they said it would be tight. What happens if they don't make that timeline or the federal government doesn't grant the waiver?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson. Maybe the department could speak to that.
Well, that was a question I didn't ask, is if they feel that they can make it, but my question is if they can't make the, or if the federal government doesn't give the waiver, what happens on January 1st?
I think, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson should have.
This is the gentleman I talked to, but we didn't talk about that. Worst-case scenario is what I'll call it.
I see a member of the department coming forward. Sir, can you state your name for the record and answer Representative Carlson's question?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwitty from the Commerce Department, Representative Carlson. In the event that the state would not receive an approved 1332 waiver, then we would not be in receipt of any federal dollars that may help fund the reinsurance program. So I think ultimately the answer to your question is dictated by what ends up passing through the legislature to determine what will happen in that situation. So the program certainly could exist with only state dollars put in. The program, if the language were to be amended to say that the program were to be contingent upon receipt of a 1332 waiver, which is not what it says currently, but if that were the case, then the program would not exist. So I think that's ultimately a question for policymakers to decide what you would like to see occur in that circumstance. But the only thing, certainly, if we did not receive a 1332 waiver successfully from the federal government, we would not be in receipt of any federal dollars here, and there would, I think, if the program were to continue and reinsurance payments were to be made lowering premiums, there may be an impact on public programs administered from by other agencies. I wouldn't want to speak on their behalf.
Representative Davids.
I'm sorry.
Representative Carlson?
If on that question, if he was going to respond. Otherwise, I was going to ask a follow-up.
To the Brickwitty point, or from the department here, the new federal bill gives grants for reinsurance programs that would be available for use in 2018. So, if that happened, then the question is, would we even need a waiver from the feds? And the answer is probably not. What I mean,
Mr. Brickwitty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, to that point, that's 24 hours old worth of information, so that's entirely possible. We are in the process of analyzing the proposal in D.C., so that may be another opportunity. This is reflective of the times in which we live, where we're trying to do something as rapidly as possible, but also trying to adapt to a changing environment in Washington.
Representative Carlson.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I've been following that, at least in the news, and that's a bill that's introduced, and already, even within the majority caucus in Congress, there's a lot of disagreement over that bill. So that, I would say, Chair Davids, is another kind of what-if, you know, situation. What if that doesn't pass, or what does pass in the end? But my follow-up question was of the department, intended to call you Peter because of our history, but at any rate, the question is if it doesn't take place, you've answered that there are some things, some contingency plans that could take place. But now are the actuaries going to actually be able to have that plan ready by July 5th? You told me the other day you thought that they would. And I've, in other forums, dealt with actuaries, and that can be a rather time-consuming process before they'll sign on the dotted line. So you indicated that the department has already done some upfront work, so I'd be interested in how confident, for the record here, you are representing the department as to meeting that July 5th with all the actuarial information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I am confident that the department can submit a waiver application in the time that it is required. I will note, as you point out, it requires a detailed 10-year actuarial study. It also requires the opportunity for meaningful public input, which the federal government has told Alaska involved something more than just putting it on the Alaska Insurance Department's website. So they've had some public meetings. Hawaii, who pursued a 1332 waiver on a separate subject, also had public meetings. It is an aggressive timeline. I do think we can meet it. I wouldn't want to comment on, and give odds on actually receiving approval of the federal waiver, but I think we can get it in so that it is in the mix and would be in a position to help Minnesotans if this bill were to pass, if we are able to get legislative authority to submit the waiver by the end of March.
And then one final question, Mr. Chairman. The states that you referenced, Alaska and one other, have they actually been granted a waiver, or is that in progress?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, Hawaii has received a waiver, but on a very separate, different subject than this. Alaska is pursuing a waiver for a state-based reinsurance program. Representative Halverson's bill, which was heard today in House Commerce, is modeled after that approach to the same, solving the same problem. They have received confirmation from the federal government that they have submitted a completed application. The federal government now has up to 180 days to either approve or disapprove the waiver application. So that's where they are in this process.
Thank you.
Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to revert just a little bit back to a question that my friend from Olmsted had on, you know, where's the savings here? If you look at page 6 of the fiscal note towards the bottom, they estimate 17% to 18%. That's from the fiscal note, not from the author of the bill. I get very... It's not that I'm paranoid, it just seems like everybody's after me, and I don't want to be stating numbers that we can't. I don't like writing checks our bodies can't cash, but that's what the fiscal note says, 17%, 18%. So that's substantial savings to the consumer, but I'm not going to put guarantees on anything.
Other questions? Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids, first of all, I don't think there's anything in the bill, though, that, I mean, that could happen, but I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's anything in the bill that requires that reduction from the plans. So.
Well, oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, please.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. You can't put a rate decrease in a bill. I mean, that's just not going to happen. But after analyzing the bill, the professionals at the department are thinking that it would be, or stating it would be 17. I don't know how you go 17 to 18%. Isn't it 17 or 18%? About 17 or 18%, right in between there somewhere. And so we're not going to put in the bill that it's going to save this much. That's what the fiscal note is for.
Well, Representative, okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I actually wanted to mention a couple of other things. First of all, I think I'm still trying to understand how this works, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but the way this is being paid for, it's diverting a couple of funding streams. One thing it's doing is taking this HMO premiums tax and putting it, sending it into this new fund, the premium security account. So as I'm understanding it, these HMO premium taxes right now are used to, they go into the healthcare access fund and to support Minnesota Care. There's also a transfer out of the healthcare access fund money that's currently there to support this program. So one thing for members to think about is that in the past, in fact, one of the criticisms of the governor's budget this year, and I think I heard this in this committee, that there was a criticism that he was taking healthcare access fund money for something for which it was not intended. That is to support some of the funding for our Medicaid population. So even though he was taking some money to use for, to support healthcare for poor people, it wasn't the same poor people that the money was originally intended for. And he was, has been criticized for that. What this bill does is take that same money and put it into a new fund to be used for to prop up insurance companies to help them provide, hopefully, less expensive insurance for yet a different group of people, people who have higher incomes, presumably, who are actually able to go out and buy their own insurance. So I just think that that's something that needs people need to think about as they're voting for this bill. So, you know, it's I know that oftentimes here we, when we want to be against something, we come up with reasons for it, and we may or may not be consistent across different issues. But this is one where I think a lot of us have a lot of heartburn when we see the Healthcare Access Fund used for things that it was never intended for. And I think this is definitely one of those places. So I guess that if the intention here is that the healthcare is that the Minnesota Care program is going to just disappear and go away, then you know, we're possibly taking a funding source that we're using for one group of people and using it for a higher income group of people. Now, personally, I would like to see all Minnesotans be able to afford insurance, and I would like us to change our system so that we, you know, quit building in these different cliffs for different income categories. But that aside, I think it's important to understand that is what this bill is doing. I also just wanted to comment that Representative Davids said that something about this is kind of the only thing that we've got that can possibly achieve these goals. And we do absolutely agree that there is urgency here to get something in place. I think it's by April 1st if we're going to have any plans out there. But the governor has put forward another proposal, and that is the Minnesota Care buy-in proposal, which it's very disturbing that that has gotten no hearings whatsoever. Because, and I'm not saying that's a perfect plan. None of these are perfect. There's, I think anybody who works in this area for any length of time realizes there's no perfect solution to any of this. We try and we do the best we can. But I'm really distressed that we're considering this as a solution, where we're not considering the other solution at all. And it may come down at the end of session, or sooner, not the end of session. We've got to, very soon, the governor and the legislature have to reach an agreement about how to proceed for 2018, or we will possibly not have a market. And that would be a disaster for everyone and for a lot of Minnesotans. So I really would urge the majority members to at least give the governor's proposal hearings so that we might possibly work together to come up with something. Perhaps it will be sort of a hybrid of some of this, but the advantage of the Minnesota Care buy-in is that it does guarantee that there will be something that Minnesotans can buy. So that is something that you know, is a real advantage of that, which even this proposal doesn't really guarantee. I mean, we think that, sure, insurance companies will look at this and they'll see the dollar signs lining up a little better. And even the for-profits, because we could have for-profit insurance companies entering our market now, remember. Some of these companies could be new companies that are for-profit companies that may look at this and say, oh, there's a little money to be made now. Let me come in and make some of this money that the state of Minnesota has put forward to prop up our industry. So, I mean, we're going to all have to swallow hard at some point, but I think we should be considering all of the options so that we can figure out how to make them work together and come up with something that the legislature can live with and the governor will sign.
Representative Davids.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, and others, I would guess that if this bill hit the governor just like this, I can't predict what the governor signs. He doesn't sign many of my bills. But so I learned that one the hard way. But I would say in testimony we had this afternoon, Representative Halverson, her bill, which has some merit and we gave a good look to, that is fully funded by the Healthcare Access Fund. And I would just like to quote her. She said today that the Healthcare Access Fund is meant to help people access health care. And so she uses all of her money from the Healthcare Access Fund. I don't want to use all the money out of the Healthcare Access Fund. As you'll see, that I'm quite creative. I have very different revenue streams. Now, we can talk about the governor's plan some other day. I don't think tonight's the night for that. A couple other things here is we also don't show on the fiscal note that the MCHA, the Minnesota Conference of Health Association, has $35 million sitting in their treasury. And I think as this thing moves on, that should be some money that would be used to help with this bill also. And also, members, if you look at page 5, what are the parameters of my bill? Number one, to stabilize or reduce premium rates in the individual market, right in the bill. Number two, will increased participation in the individual market three mitigate the health impact high-risk individuals have on premium rates in the individual market? That's the purpose of reinsurance. Four, taking into account any federal funding available. And, I mean, you can read for yourself. Just go right down the list. But the number one priority is to stabilize or reduce premium rates in the individual market. So we can sit here all day and pontificate about, you know, what should we be doing here, but we have to do something. Now, if you want to vote this down, that's up to you. Just let the 2018 market go and talk to your constituents about how you just made their bad situation even worse. That's an option. An option is to do nothing. I'm very, very good at doing nothing. I'm one of the best. But this is a very, very serious situation, and we have to get this thing going. And I've been very clear. I don't know if this is the final thing the governor can sign. I don't know that. I just know we have to get something moving so the discussion can keep going. You know, I think this is a very reasonable, well-thought-out plan because it's mine. So I really appreciate your support, members.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 5, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 5 as amended is referred to the General Register.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question just was, do you know when we're going to be hearing this bill on the floor?
I do not know the answer to that.
Special session tonight.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Representative Hillstrom. I didn't see your hand up if you had it up until I was just about to hit the gavel. So I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
All right. Okay. Representative Gunther. You got two bills. Let's have you come up.
Okay. Sorry.
Which one of my bills do you want to hear, Mr. Chairman?
Let's do House File 1890 first.
Okay.
Representative Gunther moves that House File 1890 be referred to the General Register. Representative Gunther.
House File.
Members, let's listen to Representative Gunther.
House File 1890 creates a statutory appropriation for legislators' salaries, taxes, and retirement contributions. In 2016, a constitutional amendment that removed legislators' power to set their own pay passed by 76.33% throughout the state. The voters have overwhelmingly decided that legislators should not determine their pay. This bill would appropriate the amount prescribed by the Legislative Salary Council, which is required to issue a report by March 31st. At this point, we do not know what the salary amount will be. The council could lower, increase, or keep their salaries the same. House File 1890 ensures that whatever the amount is prescribed, that's the amount the legislature will appropriate. In other words, the constitutional amendment was determined to say, we don't want to prescribe our own salary and we don't want to approve what somebody else prescribes for us. So we won't be accused of saying this is what we set our salary at. So members, this is what we can do now to make sure that we don't have to make that decision, that the Compensation Council will do it for us, as the constitutional amendment said. And I'll stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Gunther. Seeing no questions. Representative Gunther, anything else come to mind?
Please vote yes.
All right. Representative Gunther renews his motion that House File 1890 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House File 1890 is referred to the General Register.
Thank you, members.
And Representative Gunther's got House File 706. Representative Gunther moves that House File 706 be referred to the General Register. Representative Gunther, could you explain 706?
I move that House File 706 go before the committee and recommend that it will be referred to the General Register. This bill creates a statutory requirement that each of the four legacy funds maintain a 5% reserve, which will protect against any fund deficits. It is management and budget's recommendation to keep a 5% reserve. As of February forecast, three of the legacy funds are expected to have deficits: the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, the Clean Water Fund, and the Parks and Trail Fund. This bill will help prevent deficits in the future, and I ask for your support.
Questions for the chairman of the Legacy Committee? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank Representative Gunther for bringing this forward. As someone who chaired the Legacy Committee, when the funds, at least two, maybe three of them, went below 5%, I think it's a very good idea to statutorily have it at 5%.
Other discussion? Seeing no discussion, Representative Gunther renews his motion that House File 706 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 706 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Gunther. The final bill on the agenda is House File 837. Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson moves that House File 837 be referred to the General Register. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment for House File 837, the A1. I'd like to move that to get the bill in the shape I'd like.
Representative Torkelson moves the A1 amendment. And Representative Torkelson, can you describe the amendment?
It relates to an issue having to do with data access. It'll take a little bit of time for me to explain. You want me to go through that now, Mr. Chair? You want to discuss the bill itself first?
Well, I guess we're on the amendment. I know that this issue has been before the committee before, but I just felt that we at least ought to have a record of what the A1 amendment was generally about. People have questions for Representative Torkelson on the A1 amendment? Representative Hausman?
Mine is to you, I guess, since this is just going on in Ways and Means and it does relate to the department, do they, maybe they're not even here, but do they have an opportunity to give their response to this, about the possibility of this? It talks about redaction of...
Okay, we haven't been contacted about anyone wanting to testify on this bill. However, if you want to ask the department to come forward. Obviously, that's your right.
And this has been posted? So this is...
Yes. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we heard this issue in civil law. Is this significantly different than the issue we heard in civil law?
Representative Torkelson.
I've not been to civil law.
I'm sorry?
I've not been to civil law.
But hasn't this issue been...
Well, I guess I'm not in civil law, so I don't know if it was in civil law either. But I do know that we discussed this in Ways and Means some time ago. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just everything that has to do with Chapter 13, right, is mandated in the rules that it has to go to civil law. And so my question is this something that has been vetted there according to the rules?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not, I don't know, but I'd be happy if you'd like to describe the amendment at this point and why it's before us.
I missed the last. Could you repeat that, Representative Torkelson?
Isn't it great we got a new room with such a great sound system?
It is.
It sounds pretty good up here, Mr. Chair, and I realize after sitting in the other part of the room, it's not so good. So I will try to speak more clearly and loudly so I can not only hear myself, but you can hear me too. This comes before us this evening because of what happened actually last fall. You may recall that there was an effort on the governor's part to authorize FAST Act spending of $105 million by utilizing the LAC to make that authorization. Former chair of the Transportation Finance Committee, Representative Kelly, objected to that, and the governor withdrew his request to authorize those funds. At that same time, former Chair Sanders requested data access of the emails in relation to that exchange, and no response came until I sent a second letter in January making that same request, at which time I did get a response and received a number of redacted emails, some of which you have examples of in your packet. And so, and then that was followed up by a letter stating that that email information was not available because it was part of the governor's preparation for his budget. But it does say in statute that once the budget has been released, that protection is no longer in place. And so in an effort to access this information, I'm attaching this amendment to the authorization for the FAST Act, $105 million of transportation funding.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, as I read the amendment, while it references Chapter 13, it doesn't appear to try to actually change anything in Chapter 13. So I don't know that it would then have to go to the Civil Law Committee, although obviously someone could always make a motion to do that. But Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just noticed that Representative Scott doesn't serve on this committee, and her and Representative Lesh consistently make motions to send bills that have Chapter 13 in them, and I was just trying to find out if, in fact, we're complying with the House rules, because if we aren't, I am certain we will hear a motion on the House floor, Mr. Chair.
No, certainly a fair question. Oh, now we have something else. Okay. Other discussion to the A1 amendment. All right, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Torkelson, can you explain House File 837 as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 837 as amended would authorize the Department of Transportation to utilize the $105 million of federal FAST Act resources. And I've already described the amendment. And there is information in your packets if you would like to have any more details.
Okay, discussion on the bill. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I did turn around and see that MnDOT is here. I don't know if we could hear from them since the amendment has just been added.
Is there a representative from MnDOT that would come forward? Welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Could you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Tracy Hatch. I'm the Deputy Commissioner and Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Transportation.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hatch. Representative Hausman, do you have a question for Ms. Hatch?
The nature of the you've seen the amendment, I'm assuming, and is there a disagreement about what information can be shared, and how do we reach an agreement by March 31st if the money is not tied up as a result of that?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not actually seen the response, the redacted response that was provided, so I don't actually know what was redacted. What I have seen is the response from our legal department, our chief counsel's area, regarding the reasons for the redaction. And so I would draw your attention to Minnesota Statute 13.605, Subdivision 1B. The second-to-last sentence there is really the reason, my understanding is, and I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that's the reason for the redaction, that while that section does indicate that information used in the preparation of the governor's budget is available to be released and is public data after the budget is released, supporting data does not become part of the preliminary drafts that are released. So Our legal department deemed that, those pieces were supporting data to the governor's request or to requests or related to requests that actually did not make it into the governor's budget or the governor's legislative proposals. And because of that, my understanding is they released everything else, but the supporting data that fit that criteria is what was held back. I would also mention that they did invoke the last sentence there, which says that part of that data that they deem useful that would aid the administration or aid policymakers in making that decision that could be released, they did release that.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, just one follow-up, if I could, because my understanding is there's a time urgency that if we don't have the authorization to for this funding, I can't remember the number. It seems to be something like at least 20 projects would immediately be slowed down, I can't recall is if we saw, did we see a list of those 20? Are they all over the state, or?
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a list of projects. There's 28 projects total. We'd be happy to make that list available again. It has been available since the fall. We have made every attempt to try to gain access to the authority to spend these funds. Just as a reminder to the committee, this is $105 million of federal funds that were authorized in the recent FAST Act legislation, and it's $105 over and above what we had authority to spend. The funding was already programmed on projects that were next in the queue and lined up, and so the sooner we can get the funds out, the sooner we can get these projects encumbered and get them underway. We are under a time crunch. We have been since last spring. This was considered by the legislature last year, was part of the request to the legislature last session, and made it in the final bill. I don't believe it was controversial at all. I believe it had bipartisan support. The bill in total just didn't pass at the end of that last weekend. And therefore these funds didn't pass. And so we made an attempt to secure authority through the LEC process. It would have been an unusual process for these type of funds, but there is nothing in statute that prohibits the LEC process. And that's why I worked with MMB and got their concurrence to take that approach. The department believes strongly that we really need access to these funds. The deadline that we're up against is, in order to get these funds going and have the best chance of being able to utilize them all, we're really up against kind of our last deadline, which means we have to hit an April and two May lettings with these projects. So that would mean we would need authority by the end of March in order to get those advertised. But we've done everything we can up to this point in terms of getting the projects ready. But if we don't have the available funds, we are unable to put them out for solicitation.
I have Representatives Drazkowski, Fabian, and Hillstrom. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Torkelson, I really like the amendment, and I like the approach. I have a couple of suggestions maybe I'll share with you afterwards, but I can see where the department would see a conflict between the word without redaction and the existing law that says Chapter 13 and the reasons for which they redacted this in the first place. So I'd recommend adding notwithstanding anything in Chapter 13 within your amendment, and also would recommend as an idea that they can't release the funds until receipt by the department of a letter from the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the House and the Finance Committee in the Senate acknowledging full receipt of the documents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as I told Representative Hillstrom in the parking lot the other day here in the hallway, I know as much about data practices as hogs do about Sunday school, but Mr. Gehring is here from House Research and is kind of an expert on data practices. If it would be your desire, he could probably help to shed some light on this issue. Or Chair Torkelson.
Well, I may leave that up to Chair Torkelson. I guess, to me, if the department just comes forward with the information, we can get the money real soon. But Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And based on the testimony that I heard, and let's just cut through this. Basically, the department is saying we are prohibited under the law from giving you this data, and the legislature is saying pay no attention to Chapter 13. We know what the law is, but we want you to turn over the data anyways. So this actually is, Mr. Chair, really subject to changes in Chapter 13, and this is pretty clear that it probably should have gone through the Civil Law Committee, and I would expect that especially if the amendments coming from Representative Drazkowski come forward. There are a whole bunch of folks that in civil law would think that this bill would violate House rules.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, and I guess if the bill passes and it goes to the floor, I suppose either Chair Scott or Representative Lesch could make a motion. We're not actually changing Chapter 13. We're just referencing it in the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, what you're saying is you're ordering that the department pay no attention to Chapter 13 and release this information, which the department is saying that they can't because of Chapter 13. And so, in fact, you're not changing Chapter 13, but you're telling the department to violate the law that is in Chapter 13. That's what you're telling them to do, Mr. Chair.
I don't, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify one point. I was listening to Ms. Hatch, and I didn't follow her completely, but supporting data at this point is public information. It's merely the preliminary drafts that are not public information. And apparently it's the department's, they seem to consider all of this information preliminary drafts. There's just a couple of examples in your packet of what a redacted email looks like. It's kind of a waste of ink if you ask me, Mr. Chair, but we had a stack of about approximately 30 pages of emails, most of which were redacted. Perhaps that is all preliminary data, but I doubt it. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know whether what's in the information is supposed to be redacted or not based on law, making no judgment about. But I understand that you think that the information that's in there should be given under current law, and they're saying based on current law they can't. And so that really is a Chapter 13 issue on whether or not they're complying with the law. And so, Mr. Chair, again, those are things that we usually deal with every day in the Civil Law Committee.
Other discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Garofalo.
Just, Mr. Chairman, advice to those who are paying attention into the executive branch. 9 times out of 10 when the legislative branch is being pushy about data practices requests and insisting as a see information, 9 times out of 10, we already have the information. We just need it validated. Just a little tip.
Mr. Chair, I would
like Representative Torkelson.
I would like to hear from the staff member that has some expertise in this area, if you don't mind taking a few minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Mr. Gehring, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm available to answer questions if committee members have them.
Representative Torkelson, would you like to ask Mr. Gehring a question?
Yes. My first question would be regarding timeliness. This original request was made in October, and no response was received until January.
Mr. Gehring?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, so the Data Practices Act, the current law requires that agencies respond to data requests within a reasonable time. There's not a specific number of days that agencies need to respond to this type of request, but they are required to respond within a reasonable period. And I guess it's I defer to the committee and to Representative Torkelson about whether the several months that they had to wait for this request was a reasonable time or not.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems that 3 or 4 months is an unreasonable amount of time to wait for a response to a request, in my opinion.
Representative Torkelson, do you have some other questions for Mr. Gehring?
Yes, my other question would be, how do we determine what is preliminary drafts and what is supporting data?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, so there's not a specific definition of either of those terms in 13605, so the way Chapter 13 usually works is that the agency makes that determination. They interpret the terms themselves and decide what they can release, and then and then provide data accordingly. It sounds like, from what I understand this request to be, that the agency has taken a fairly broad interpretation of what a preliminary draft is and has included these emails and other documents that may or may not be we don't know what's in them, so we can't really judge whether they're a draft of a budget proposal or not. So it sounds to me like the agency is, like I said, has taken a pretty broad interpretation of what's protected under Chapter 13.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gearing, what is the regular process if you dispute something under the Data Practices Act, if you think you're entitled to something and the department doesn't release it? What is every other citizen of Minnesota's procedure to challenge that?
Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, so there's several remedies that are available. One is through the Office of Administrative Hearings. The other is whether it would be a action in civil court to compel compliance with Chapter 13. And then, obviously, in the legislative process, you could enact a law that requires some different response compared to what the agency has provided.
Other discussion or questions for Mr. Gearing? All right, any other discussion to the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House File 837 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. House File 837 as amended is referred to the General Register. Members, with that, I don't just believe I got anything else. Just in a second here. Okay. Members, on our Monday morning committee meeting, just to make an announcement, we're looking at having the Met Council come in and kind of giving us an overview of their transit plans, in particular their rail expansion plans. I just feel that, you know, this is a area that potentially the state and local governments are looking at spending a lot of money in coming years, and I don't think we've ever had that sort of an overview before this committee, and so I think it would be useful for us to just get a sense of what their plans are, what the costs are, and give members an opportunity to ask questions about it. So there may well be some other bills on the calendar as well, but that's our agenda for Monday morning. And seeing no other questions or members that want to be recognized, we are adjourned.